Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back, everybody, to another edition of Irish Illustrated Insider. I'm Tim Priester with Tim O'Malley from Irish Illustrated. We're joined by John Bryce of Football Scoop and also Irish Illustrated and the esteemed Pete Sampson of The Athletic. Welcome, gentlemen. We've got an unlimited amount of topics to talk about coming off of a full practice, full observation for the media. We only have one more of those before the Blue Gold game, so we tried to savor it as much as we can. Irish Illustrated subscribers have seen our instant analysis with Tim and John and myself yesterday, so we've talked about some of this, but we've got more to get into. Irish Illustrated subscribers have a pretty good idea what we talked about yesterday. That's why I'm going to throw it to you, Pete, first. I know you put out your stars of the day, but some of the topics that you'd like to address here today on Irish Illustrated Insider.
I don't think I could overstate how different the receiver room felt watching practice from a year ago or 2 years ago. I mean, it was 2 years ago. We went to a spring practice and they had three scholarship receivers. And you're just like, what is this? And to see what they put out yesterday without Jordan Faison.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. Yeah.
Is just really impressive. Now you feel like you've got seven guys that can help you, maybe six and a half. Whereas before, I mean, how many years in a row have we had to have the offseason conversation about, like, does Notre Dame have a viable third receiver? That's not going to be a problem this year. That they should have four or five game ready guys, and whether whoever the quarterback is, that's significant. The other thing that really stuck with me was the fact that they gave CJ Carr a rep with Jaden Thomas and Ben Morrison, and they gave Micah Gilbert a rep against Ben Morrison as well, because coaches do not just give those reps away to kids because we want to see a cool highlight. They give those reps to freshmen only when they've earned the right to have them. So the fact that Carr and Gilbert are already getting reps against, like, air quotes, varsity players, never mind All-Americans, that was also really significant to me.
Yeah, Pete, as it relates to the wide receivers, Bo Collins was there yesterday but not participating. And then, of course, Logan Saldate, who I think we like him a lot, another freshman coming in June. So your point well taken. We talked about it extensively. I'm going to throw it over here to you, John and Tim, but Jaden Harrison really stood out. I thought Jaden Thomas looked great. I thought Jaden, it was a run on Jaden's yesterday and will continue to be. I thought, actually, we have a question on Jaden Greathouse here in the second segment, but I thought he looked extremely sudden. And then one of the guys I didn't mention was Micah Gilbert yesterday. I thought Micah Gilbert looked to me like an older receiver, very precise, very fundamentally sound. His background in high school, playing against good competition and having good coaching, I thought really showed itself yesterday.
Yeah, I felt like, Pete, you say they should have four or five ready. I think they'll have six ready, if you think about it. And that doesn't even include Micah Gilbert. You should have Chris Mitchell, Jordan Faison, Jaden Greathouse, Jaden Harrison, Bo Collins, and Jaden Thomas ready. That's a quality six. Yeah. And then, of course, Micah Gilbert we like, but we have to see a lot more. That K.K. Smith flashed really good quickness. I know he had a good deep ball, but when he was covered well by Christian Gray in the pass sailed out of bounds, deep post. But he also separated from Gray with a tremendous stop at about 12 feet, or 12 yards, where Gray couldn't, and he did. There's a lot more depth there because, as Pete Sampson pointed out 2 years ago, K.K. Smith would be in the starting lineup right now with their three wide receivers on scholarship. But one thing I want to point out that we haven't even got to yet is We love all the speed that's coming. And, you know, you're talking about how many three wide, four wide. You can avoid more two tight ends this way as well. Chris Mitchell, Jaden Thomas, and Bo Collins. That's a big veteran threesome that doesn't even include their fastest guys, maybe, or quickest guys in Harrison and Faison. And of course, the guy we all like in Greathouse. They have different options of being fast, being big, and combinations they can use.
Well, and we have yet to mention Deon Colsey, who was back yesterday and looked to be in the best shape. Now, we have to see it consistently from Deon Colsey, but let's not forget how he started the 23 season in the Ireland game and had a really nice performance against Navy. He has to stay healthy. He has to be consistent. He appeared to be in the best shape that I think we've seen him going into a camp. He certainly looked sleeker, trimmer, and more muscular, very similar to Jaden Thomas. I thought that there were some very obvious signs, in my opinion, of the impact already of Lauren Landau. I talked to some people on staff last night who echoed those sentiments. You can see that he's already having an impact with explosiveness, with suddenness, with speed bursts, some of the things that Marcus Freeman really identified when he went searching for Matt Bayless's replacement. Cam Williams is another guy we haven't mentioned that was obviously very highly recruited. Yeah, they looked good yesterday. They looked completely rebuilt. They've come a long way since Dell Baker completely neglected that room.
Yeah, you know, to your point, John, I agree with what you say about Colsey.
Dell Alexander, excuse me.
About Colsey and his conditioning. I think O'Malley and I would be of the mindset here that it's more of a mindset issue with Colsey than actual physical conditioning. But Tim, to your point about the kind of lineup you can put on the field, I mean, Jaden Thomas is a tight end worthy blocker. And yes, so when you put him on the field, now you really get some versatility. You can mix some of that speed. Yeah, Bo Collins has size. I think we're going to have to. You can't get a whole lot of Clemson film of Bo Collins blocking. So I think that'll be something that we'll have to observe on the practice field come fall. But no, it's a great point. And I mean, somebody mentioned KK Smith to me, and I'm like, geez, I did see him flash once, but I can't, you know, there's so many other guys that stood out. I personally don't think that Cam Williams physically is probably going to be ready.
Right.
An early contributor, but John, but I mean, long-term, there's no doubt you can see what an athlete he is. I was a little, I guess I expected to see a little bit more flash out of Chris Mitchell yesterday. Now, again, in fairness, maybe he's got a hamstring that's biting him a little bit yesterday. You know, I don't know. So I don't want to, I think there's a tendency, I dare say, I think there's more of a tendency for fans to overreact to a tidbit of information. We're a little bit more conditioned to, you know, to recognize that there can be a reason why this guy isn't at his peak on this particular day. There's been a lot of talk about how, John, you know, I mean, and a lot of talk about how Chris Mitchell has flashed during winter conditioning. So obviously he's done that. But man, Jaden Harrison, holy crap, he came out ready to show that, hey, I'm here and I'm big time. And we have a question about players that Mike Denbrock can accentuate.
Yeah.
Jaden Harrison's one of those, certainly.
Yeah. And Chris Mitchell did have the Randy Moss performance yesterday on Jaden Mickey, where he went up over and made the sensational catch. So I think one thing we have to get used to is the last couple of years, if they were scholarship receivers, they got a hell of a lot more opportunities in practice than what these guys are going to get, because there's actually more bodies to go through the routes. And as for Cam Williams, I'm sorry.
The walk-ons did too in past years.
Yeah, they had a lot exactly. Of opportunity. So as for a guy like Cam Williams, he's going to be better for the defense because now they're going to be facing him when it's the third set of wideouts instead of already being rotated into a walk-on wide receiver in one of those roles. So it's just a completely revamped room. Jaden Harrison was phenomenal yesterday. I know it's just one day, but he just looked so clean, so smooth in everything that he was doing. And sometimes you wonder, how's a guy going to translate from group of five to power five, or power, whatever you want to call Notre Dame's existence. And he looked like a guy that was just seamlessly coming along.
I think so it's,
I want to go back to, go ahead, Pete.
I was going to say, it is bizarre to me that we're talking about Notre Dame football, right? And like, people read 24/7 and how recruiting's going and all that. Notre Dame added somebody from Florida International and Marshall. And the receiver room got a lot better. A lot better. I think it's just like, that's something to just sort of ponder as you think about recruiting rankings and instant impact guys and who's going to play right away. That and why the offense struggled in some big spots last year is they just weren't that talented at wide receiver, probably less so than we even thought. And now they've taken a huge step in a positive direction. And I would just throw it. I love Dembrock after Mitchell Moss, Jaden Mickey at the end of practice, be like, next play. That's what we do. Cause he's probably missed Notre Dame football the last few years. That's not what Notre Dame does. So they got excited about that kind of play. But at LSU, when it's Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas, you're like, what's the big deal? This happens every day, five times. So that, you know, getting that mentality in a good spot too, is maybe that can be a significant part of spring ball for Dembrock.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I want to circle back to Mickey. Until he got mossed, he had a better day than Chris Mitchell one-on-one. People need to hear that, because the moss thing was really cool. It looked awesome. Jaden Mickey reacted very poorly. It took him 10 seconds to go back and line up, and you could tell he was pouting. He barely got up to line up again. And as, to Pete's point, Dembrock was like, let's go. But Jaden Mickey had a really good day one-on-one against Chris Mitchell.
I thought he did a really great job of mirroring the receivers that he covered. In fact, that would be, I still believe in Christian Gray, because
me too.
I think he's a real special talent, but that's one of the better practices we've seen of Jaden Mickey.
He stuck out for me. Benjamin Morrison sticks out in a different way for everybody. Obviously Benjamin Morrison would be the highlight of the practice. It's important to note for anyone listening, all reading Pete stuff, John stuff, Tim's, this was a practice where you have to watch the safeties, wide receivers, corners, and quarterbacks more than any other position, because you just can't get enough with no pads from the offensive and defensive linemen. So even the running backs, you can't tackle them. You can't even thud them really in this one, right? I don't think that was happening. It's just that type of practice. So hopefully when we do the jersey scrimmage, you'll see, I mean, the defensive and offensive line will come a lot more to light. And we'll see some five segments where those guys go 3-on-3 and 1-on-1. Before the jersey scrimmage in mid-April. But you didn't see a lot about Howard Cross or Ashton Craig. There's a reason. I take it with a grain of salt in these situations.
Yeah. Pete, defensive side of the ball.
Ben Morrison looked pretty good. That was fine. So beyond that, I watched your instant analysis. Like I remember the play Jalen Seed made as a blitzer. That stood out to me. But just as like a situational player, which is kind of how he's been. I probably have not been as high on Jaden Ausbury as you guys have, only because I haven't really watched him a lot. I spent some time watching him yesterday. And I know there's a question about guys who could move up and down. Like, Jaden Ausbury is going to have a role somewhere. I don't know what it is, but that's somebody who I came away even more intrigued by after day one than I was going into it.
He is a smart, instinctive, quality football player. He has wisdom beyond his age in the times that we've spoken with him. He's really a mature kid, man.
He aligned KVA. We're going to keep saying KVA, even though no one else calls him that, because it's easier. He aligned Kingston twice in one pre-snap. He blitzed and broke up a pass. Other than Kaiser, I have no idea. If you just went to that practice, you'd look down to the linebackers and be like, man, 24 is versatile. So is number four. And then one guy's in his sixth year, one guy's going to his second year. And that's, if you didn't know any of those players, that was my takeaway from the linebackers. That and Preston Zinter can jump higher than I thought.
JB?
Yeah, for me, it's continuing to see Osbury's football IQ matching with his physical gifts. And again, he's a guy, you can see the body transformation. He's stronger and in better shape than he was a year ago. And he made a bunch of plays in fall camp last year. So he's a guy that stood out to me. I thought Preston Zinter flashed a little bit more than I would have expected yesterday. Again, just one day, but I remember specifically having to take note of him multiple times. And then Riley Mills, again, I can see some body transformation there. Yes. I think we all agree he played the best ball of his life down the back half of last season, to the point that the NFL, I think, was a feasible option for him. So feeling like Riley Mills has been so waiting to explode and being that much closer to explode means I'll pay extra attention to him over the course of this camp.
I'm glad John said that, because I actually wrote in my practice report from today, why is number 99 in white allowed to play with the college kids? Because he just looks a little bit different than everybody else up there.
Yeah, he's an automatic repeat on the freak list.
Yeah.
Even more so than before. Let's wrap up here. Jumping over to the offensive line, and Tim, your point's taken. I mean, line play, we didn't see a whole lot of it, but what we did see yesterday with the number one unit was the starting line in the Sun Bowl, which I don't know if everybody made that connection, but that was the case. Now we're all looking here and there, and I missed, JB, you referenced Tosh Baker getting run by
Botello.
I don't know where I was looking. I don't know where my head was, but I was observing something else at that point. I still think, and my point yesterday was that, and I'm not saying he won the job or he's won the job. I was just saying that come August, when you've gone through spring, you've gone through the summer, and you're getting ready for your first game against Texas A&M, I mean, I think I would be, it should be extremely disappointing if Tosh Baker doesn't win the job. It's his fifth year in the program. You need a guy like that to win this job.
Oh, I completely agree. Best case scenario for Notre Dame is that Tosh Baker wins that job over the course of the next 14 sessions and leaves absolutely no doubt. And he has the positioning to do so because of all his years in the program. But he has to match those years in the program with productivity on the field.
I think the worst case scenario is he doesn't win the job until it's decided in August, because then Tosh Baker is going to do something different. That's just the reality of the situation. No, he's got another year to play.
Then you need Wagner.
Wagner lost 7 pounds. If the listings are correct, he's at 281.
And somebody questioned the listings that Notre Dame had. Somebody on our message board questioned it. Look, if he weighed 295, they would want to publicize that.
Right. Right. He lost 7 pounds. I did the whole waiting thing, the whole waiting game that we aimed. I guess I usually do in August, but we're putting it up this time because people like it. There's some odd weight gains and losses in there, but Emil Wagner losing 7 pounds was not what I expected.
Yeah. Hey, we got other positions to talk about and questions to address it. Let's address that in segment two coming up, Burning Up the Boards.
Welcome back to segment two, Burning Up the Boards. Our first question from Denver Maximus, and it's one that was on every reporter's mind yesterday, I think. Can this linebacker core exceed your spring expectations based on their talent? By the end of the year, can they be better than last year's linebacker core? And that is definitely two different questions.
I was just going to say, two different questions. The answer to the first one is absolutely. The answer to the second one is, they're going to be better in 2025 than they are in 2024, right, although Kaiser won't be around. But I mean, I know that we're talking about the young guys, and it takes, look, I'm not saying that Drake Bowen and Kingston Viliamuasa can't really emerge and step forward and Jalen Snead can, but it takes thousands of reps to be as good as JD Bertrand was. And Maris Leofau was improved, but I wouldn't measure it that way. Just don't measure it that way. It's experience really, really, really counts.
Just think of JD Bertrand's reps in November of 2021 that you watched on tape or live, and JD Bertrand's reps in November of 2023 that you watched on tape or live, because he was a heck of a lot better.
Yeah. I mean, I remember training camp the first time we saw Bertrand, and you're like, well, this guy's going to be a player. Like,
mean too.
We were very optimistic about him. And then we watched him and we watched him and watched him, and he wasn't the shiny new toy anymore. So I don't really know what my linebacker expectations were for spring, but Osbury and Kingston Viliamuasa are really good players, and I don't know where they fit into this year's depth chart. The second part, can they be better than last year? I would say hell no. Linebackers are not just about plays made. They're about plays prevented, plays that never happen. And you look at third down percentage, Notre Dame was 30th last year. 20-yard gains allowed 7th. 40-yard gains allowed 8th. 10-yard gains allowed 11th. They stopped a lot of plays from happening. And because they knew where to be all the time. And it's very difficult for me to see this linebacker crew knowing where to be at the frequency and the regularity that last year's linebacker crew knew where to be all the time. You know, you see what happens when you have a bust at Louisville where somebody takes a bad run fit. That wasn't a linebacker, it was a safety. But the reason those plays didn't happen to the linebackers is because they knew where to be all the time. And that's something, again, that you, that's the thousands of reps, the Malcolm Gladwell 10,000 hours rule. JD Bertrand passed that midway through his junior year. These linebackers have a ways to go with that.
I also think two things can be true, though, before JB answers here. You can watch Notre Dame's linebackers, if they're all back, will be better. It's time for fans to watch new linebackers, too, right? It's an exciting time to watch new linebackers.
No doubt. I think we're all excited about it. I kept saying, where's JD Bertrand and Matt Salerno? Where are they?
Well, also there was, where's Michael Vincent? I haven't seen a practice without Michael Vincent in 6 years. And yeah. Pete and Tim are both like, well, he's right over there to your left, actually, if you want to
see. But somewhere else, somebody was like, man, 27 linebacker just looks more athletic. I can't put my finger on it.
For me, yeah, the points on Bertrand and even Maris, even though he hadn't played the volume of Bertrand, isn't just the practice reps. It's those game reps that you can never simulate enough on the practice field. And JD Bertrand exits Notre Dame as playing among the most games ever in this program's phenomenal history. I don't think you can overstate that. What I will say is, when you think back to the Ohio State game last year and Travion Henderson catches the edge and eviscerates Notre Dame for a 61-yard touchdown, I think this linebacking core maybe has a little bit more athleticism that might help prevent some of those plays. Now, Notre Dame didn't give up a lot of those last year, as Pete just alluded to. They were really good at making opponents, for the most part, have to work the entire length of the field to score against them. So I don't think this unit will be better than a year ago. I think this unit does have some better top-end athleticism.
And we'll move on from this question after this, but I mean, you can't watch yesterday's practice without pads and come away saying, okay, this linebacker core is going to be better. They may be more athletic, but that and playing the point about run fits and 10,000 hours, and you can't base it on a practice that they weren't in pads. Are there good athletes out there? Yeah, but that's only half the equation, maybe a little bit more than half the equation, but there's more to it. It's a good group. We'll watch them evolve. Comparisons in the fall, we'll worry about that when the fall.
And I'd rather have new linebackers. It was a long time with those linebackers. Let's watch some different football. Jack Kaiser and the new guys.
I totally agree.
Jet haters.
But I was still looking for Bertrand and Matt Salerno running around out there yesterday. Okay. A couple questions here paired up. First one from Annie Davis, too. Is Devin Ford at safety the end of movement in the running backs room? Do you anticipate a lead horse emerging or a true running back by committee? And then a question from Hayden Adam Z. How much should we read into Devin Ford's move to safety nickel? Is this just making room at the running back position, or a sign that Shuler, Minnick, Telich, Clark, Hurd aren't instilling much confidence?
I think it's a good way of holding on to Devin Ford, who, as a question was posed yesterday, could go somewhere and get some carries. Notre Dame knows he can be their best special teams player again. He was last year. Helps Devin Ford move to safety because, as Marcus Freeman pointed out, he can learn to tackle better because he's going to be an NFL special teamer, not an NFL safety or running back. I don't think it has anything to do with the safeties other than he gets to train at safety.
Yeah, I think it helps expand Devin Ford's potential career horizons. And yeah. It reminds me a little bit of Isaiah Proctor a couple of years ago when Notre Dame got him from Ohio State.
Isaiah Pryor. Yeah.
Isaiah Pryor. He never fit fully into the Notre Dame defense, but he did end up carving a very valuable role on special teams for the Fighting Irish. Devin Ford is a guy who has great versatility. No, I don't think it's an indictment of the other candidates at that position. I still think they're prospects, not suspects.
I think rarely do you see position switches come with this little upside for the player in terms of playing time at the position they just moved to. But I wouldn't expect Devin Ford to play any more at safety than he did at running back last year. He might even play less. Yeah. But it's so he can get even better on special teams. That makes sense to me. I think, you know, the safety position, you know, Shuler, Minich, Talat, Clark, Hurd, obviously Watts. I would be stunned if Ford was ahead of any of those guys at any point during the year, just based on moving over here right at the very end.
I agree with everything you guys said as it relates to the safety position. And Marcus Freeman pointed out yesterday, Devin's Ford role is as a tackler. So why not put him on defense? He is going to be on and do everything on special teams. He was really good tackling on special teams last year. And he's going to play a significant role again this year, and it's as a tackler. So why not have him practice on the defensive side of the ball? You might want to have him run some reps as a pass blocker, a running back, because he was really good at that, too.
I was going to say, you might want to keep him back there once in a while, because he was a good lead blocker down at the goal line, too. That would be the place where he could, because you just brought in two freshmen. That's not going to be the new role for those guys.
Yeah.
I mean, the other part of the running back by committee, I think there will be a committee of two, right? It'll be Price and it'll be Love. And then it will be sort of figuring out who can get the reps after that. I don't think that we're going to hear much about I don't know if it was a five-headed monster or six-headed monster. I can't remember how many heads the monster had last year, but this five-headed. Okay. Bryce says five. I think it'll be Price and Love. I mean, I think there's a gap between those two and the rest of the position. This year, and that is totally fine, because they'll find roles for the other three guys.
I agree with that, but God, is there anybody, he didn't play a massive role, but is anybody more underrated than Jabron Payne? I mean, nobody is bringing up his name at all, and Dylan McCullough loved his pad level last year, and they gave him, short yardage runs that Audric Estime certainly could have handled. But I agree, Pete, with you that I think Price and Love are the lead two, are going to be the lead two. We got to see more of the freshmen. But I thought Price and Love looked like tremendous athletes yesterday. Great shape. We've got that Dent Brock question that we'll get into here in a second. I don't see a five-headed monster this year at running back either. So that leads us to the question from Man and Ty, which is, when you think of Mike Denbrock, are there certain players for whom you think his style or coaching will be particularly beneficial? I think we all have Jeremiah Love in mind. I mentioned Jaden Harrison. Anybody else come to mind for you guys?
Actually, Faison.
Faison, maybe a Chris Mitchell.
Play wide receiver?
Yeah. That's true.
And Mike Denbrock will benefit you.
I also think if you watch what LSU did last year, I've talked about this before, about getting the ball to the running back out of the backfield. And I'm not talking about swing passes. I'm talking about getting the ball to the running back as he's heading upfield. So you don't have to put a foot in the ground and get upfield. You're getting him the football right after the snap, and he's actually moving toward the line of scrimmage. That's a huge difference, as opposed to having to put a foot in the ground and then get upfield.
I think it's a good point, though, Pete. Wide receivers, yes. And if Mitchell Evans is healthy, he's going to have a heck of a year for Mike Denbrock. Denbrock could coach tight ends, too. It's especially really good ones that are athletic. Do you guys know what was wrong with Eli Reardon yesterday? He didn't play much at all. I asked a couple other people. They didn't know either.
Yeah, I'm not sure. That was that. Yeah. His lack of reps in 11 on 11, I thought was notable, but it is March 7th. So
same thing, I guess. We just didn't ask about it. That's all they had to tell it.
Jordan Clark didn't practice yesterday with a quad. How he hurt his quad. I know there's a multitude of ways they work out. They do different things. You make a sudden move. Something doesn't feel right. You don't take a chance on March 7th. especially with Eli Raritan with the back-to-back ACLs. I mean, you hope that that's it's just a tweak or whatever. And there's,
well, they have been having their football school, which is basically their OTAs. So it's not like they've been sedentary doing nothing. There are opportunities for muscle tweaks here and there.
Next question from Judge Arthur Vandalay. Based on Marcus Freeman's post-practice comments, it seems like Drake Bowen will be more involved than Jordan Faison this spring. Since Bowen is on football scholarship, does football always trump baseball for him? Will Faison be involved at all this spring?
We had multiple questions about Bowen and Faison, and I would summarize the whole situation as much ado about very little. I wouldn't say it's nothing because they are, their time is compromised to some extent. But when Notre Dame has a football practice coming up on a Saturday in the spring, and all Drake Bowen has done is pinch run once, I mean, he's not a prominent figure on that baseball team right now. I just don't think, and Jordan Faison, I mean, that kid just proves it. Like he went, 7 months in between the previous time he had played lacrosse, and he hits the ground running. The only thing that really matters with Jordan Faison is being around Mike Denbrock and learning the system. I don't think Bowen's going to be compromised in football this spring. And I don't think any compromise of Faison football wise is going to negatively impact him in any significant way.
I agree. And the guys are around and they're in the positional meetings and they're in the team meetings. And I think that's important right now.
Yeah, you know, Faison is a better lacrosse player than he's a football player. Drake Bowen is a better football player than he's a baseball player right now. You sort of see that in how they're used in the other sports and the needs. You know, Jordan Faison is a really good football player, but is he a locked in starter? No. Drake Bowen could be. So that's the opportunity for Drake Bowen is much bigger in football than it is in baseball right
now. There is no way that Sean Stifler is going to allow Drake Bowen to be compromised on the football field. He just won't.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, sitting Faison, this is probably speaks more to like the difference between lacrosse and baseball. Like, all due respect to baseball athletes, like lacrosse, you're getting your butt kicked.
Well, I mean, Freeman said that. Yeah. Marcus Freeman said that
the physical toll of lacrosse is, it can be football without pads and someone's hitting you with a hockey stick. That wears on you in a way that baseball just doesn't. So it's smart the way that they're doing it. It makes perfect sense.
I will add, and I mentioned this in our, as a nod to Jaden Harrison and the fact that Jaden Thomas can play that big slot. If Jaden Harrison keeps having these practices and Faison's watching, I would think maybe Jordan be like, you know what? I think I'm going to come to practice on this one. I'd like to go ahead and remind you guys that I can play this game.
Yeah, he'll have his moments. I mean, they've already played. Have they already played four lacrosse games? They only have.
Yeah, they were 3-1.
Well, the fifth one would be Saturday. They only have 11 regular season lacrosse matches. So he'll have his opportunities. But, and I understand the question, of course, but there's no way they're going to. I mean, Sean Stifler's not going to, the baseball coach is not going to compromise Drake Bowen's ability to compete for a starting spot on the football team. And, you know, Faison. The Faison is just a natural. He'll get everything that he needs, and I don't think it's going to be an issue. You want to take that one, Tim?
Yep. Next question is Jim Booney, CRS. Priester, has your opinion changed on Jagasa at all, or has your opinion on Jagasa changed at all based on new intel over the past couple of months?
I'm not sure what opinion that he's saying that I have about him, other than I said he's a guard.
Guard. Yeah.
Imagine if. When Quentin Nelson came in, I said, oh, he's a guard. Of course, he came in listed as offensive tackle. And there was some pushback from the Nelson family to moving him to guard. It's not an indictment that Jagasa, I'm not sure. I'm not saying that Jim Booney CRS is making this an indictment on my opinion about Jagasa. But look, Jagasa is the best candidate for left tackle at Notre Dame. He just is. You could say Wagner because but Wagner's not playing there and Wagner didn't win the starting job in the Sun Bowl. So Jagasa is going to be fine at left tackle. I think by the time we get to the season and he's He's well past any physical setbacks. Hopefully he doesn't have any in the spring. His body will continue to be shaped like a left tackle. But Jagasaw's he was the highest rated player in the class. He's the best left tackle that they have, and he'll be fine there. I think long-term in the NFL, he could be a guard, but that's not putting him down in any way. A lot of it is just body composition and the way he moves.
I'm trying to think of that 2027, he could be a guard. I mean, it's like a lot. It's so far away that, yeah. I mean, the runway between there. And like the best thing I'd say about Charles Jagasaw from day one is like, I didn't notice RJ Oben one time.
Yeah, I didn't write his name down, actually.
So
didn't write his name down though either. So there you go.
They were lined up. He was on the left side.
Different times.
Oben's on the left side of the D line. He'd been going against Baker more. Although you guys,
it's a strong week. Yeah, but
Batello beat Baker, so Oben's on the other side. You know,
right, right. Yep.
Yeah, I guess you didn't see like, oh god, they got a problem on the left.
Yeah.
To Tim's point, if Joe Alt and Blake Fisher were the tackles, Charles Jagasaw would not be the designated backup left tackle or right tackle. He would be the fourth guard competing for a starting spot.
That's right.
He would. They would put him in the mix to see if he could beat out Coogan, Trout, or Spindler.
His abilities. It's 42 years of watching offensive linemen. It's just an opinion about body composition and who fits best. That's all.
Never should have moved Quentin Nelson to guard, Tim. Never should have done it.
Question from Domer Hardly Knower. Among those players that repped with the first team Thursday, who's in the most danger of being overtaken by the time spring ball is over?
I don't know, but that's my favorite name of a questioner.
That's an all-timer right there.
I have lost composure.
All right, back on topic.
Tosh Baker. I'm sorry. But Tosh Baker. It's Tosh Baker. It's the nickel is pretty fluid, I think. And even though there's a lot of talk about Clark, but Tosh Baker has to prove it. Tosh Baker has to go out and prove it. And then maybe what happens at one of the guard positions. But for me, it's Tosh Baker because there's all the potential there. The frame is incredible, but we've been waiting 4 years on it.
I guess technically Steve Angeli took reps with the first team. So I guess we could mention him as in danger of being overtaken by the highly touted and
highly compensated.
You said it, quarterback that they have. Jade Mickey, good practice. Christian Gray, good practice. That's kind of one of those where like one of them's going to start and the other one's going to play a lot. You could almost throw almost. Short of Jaden Thomas, you could throw all the other two receivers in there. But again, they're all going to play. That's a good problem to have. Adon Schuler took first team reps. Yeah, that may be a byproduct of Rod Hurd not being there. But I do wonder if, like, will they give Luke Talich a look with the first team at some point during spring? I don't know. So there are a few options, but there are not a lot.
Luke
Maltese Irish asks, which player lost to the portal over the last few seasons would you want back most? He says they have to have eligibility remaining. Let's just pretend they have eligibility remaining if you have a different answer.
Guys, go ahead.
I'll take Logan Diggs. Knows the offense. Very productive. You definitely have a three-headed monster at that point. You know he can catch the ball out of the backfield. Did it at Notre Dame, did it at LSU. So that would be my guy. And frankly, I'm not sure who else I would bring up.
Well, just because you chose Logan Diggs, and also I like the health and the chemistry of the running back room as it is now. I'll say Rico Flores just because he was a bit of a revelation last year, and I think we all enjoyed talking to him so much because he truly did seem to have such a joy for being at Notre Dame that it's a shame how things have worked out. And I've talked to some folks out in California. They're pretty excited about him at UCLA. Think he's got a lot of runway there. I would just go with Rico Flores, not out of necessarily Notre Dame's needs, but just because the joy that he brought.
Yeah. And I would agree with that, JB, just because I wanted to see his evolution because I thought, because he was so impressive to us early on, one of the difficult things to come to grips with was him leaving Notre Dame because we had all spoken to him about being at Notre Dame. It seemed it seems so genuine. Of course, if Rico Flores was here, one of those transfer wide receivers probably wouldn't be. So
I would just real quickly add, like, and I've talked to coaches about this for a long time, and it was early on when I worked at Rivals probably 15 years ago that some coaches explained to me, like, we're trying to evaluate and recruit guys who need football, not who like football. And Rico Flores is a guy who needs football, and there's just a different mentality there. And Notre Dame has a lot of great football players. Rico Flores needs football in his life, and I think that was going to be an interesting evolution for him.
Tim, missing? I can't. That's really is it, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't.
I've been racking my brain. It's definitely Flores first. Or Diggs. There's nobody else.
Yeah.
No Drew Pine. No votes for Drew Pine.
No, I don't think so.
Going once, going twice.
Yeah.
No. You know what?
Jacob Lacy?
He just retired from football for medical issues.
He could unretire. But I'm trying to just come up with one more guy. That's the only one, right?
Franklin evolved into a pretty good nose tackle for Duke.
Yeah, he's definitely uses eligibility, but we can cheat.
I'm going to, as I look at this, I started thinking about this. We don't have a question about quarterbacks, and we really haven't talked about them. So let's, I'm going to make up a question.
Tyler Buchner, is he a better transfer than Drew Pine?
Yes. Talk about what you saw. You know, we joked about on the instant analysis that they had four starting quarterback. No, they all generally threw the ball well. Now, okay, we're going to get into this because at one point, Samson and I were sitting next to each other. O'Malley was on my left. And when the quarterbacks first started throwing the football, Riley Leonard wasn't completing a lot of passes. Now, quick disclaimer, just because a pass isn't completed doesn't mean that the quarterback did something wrong. What if the receiver doesn't get separation from the DB? That's what was happening on a lot of Leonard's early throws yesterday. Then it all started to even out. Then Angeli threw one bad pass, two bad passes. But over the course of, and yesterday was a extremely pass-heavy practice, over the course of hundreds and hundreds of throws, they all threw the ball pretty damn well.
I was terrified that I was going to list Steve Angeli as one of my... I don't even want the blowback from this. But yeah, I thought they all look pretty good. Carr is really impressive. Not as a starter now, but where that's going. And it was incredibly refreshing in the same way that we didn't spend practice or micro analyzing the body language of a wide receiver. That we didn't have to sit there thinking about, like, well, the ball fluttered, but it's okay. Or, like, the ball came out with its nose down, but, yeah, you know, maybe he's working on some new things. Or, like, yeah, the accuracy. It just, all the quarterbacks just, like, looked like legitimate college quarterbacks. No, we're not talking about throwing motions or elongated releases. Just the ball went where it was supposed to go. I think Leonard will be the guy, but Carr, I feel like his ball, when he throws it, it picks up velocity 10 yards down the field. There's something weird about the way he throws it that is impressive to me. I think that he will be quite good over the long haul.
Yeah, I thought the accuracy again stood out really on all the guys, but I noticed it specifically early on from Riley Leonard and Angeli. Velocity on Carr's throws was something I noticed, as well as his accuracy. He was throwing guys into spots, which I think is a sign of his progress already. One other thing I meant to include on video yesterday and forgot that I just noticed during the course of practice that I thought shows a little bit about CJ Carr's moxie is I watched him at one point in between reps go over and greet all the recruits and shake hands with them and dap up a bunch of the recruits. Here's a guy that's in his first ever spring practice that's been on campus for 8 weeks, and he has the wherewithal to go make sure he's putting in his efforts recruiting for the future of Notre Dame. That just stood out to me because as much as it's showing his awareness of those recruits being there, it also shows he's not being swallowed up by the moment. He wasn't so dialed into, like, I can't screw up this next rep that I've got to just only focus on that. He goes over and daps up and greets a bunch of the recruits that are standing on the Notre Dame sideline.
To CJ Carr's point, the 31st thing I noticed was that CJ Carr finally threw a bad pass. pretty far into practice.
I mean, I just like think of all the early enrollee quarterbacks we've watched over the last 10, 15 years.
Ugh, I mean, sorry.
They all stink. Like when we yeah. watch them at first, like they're not good. And like CJ Carr is a huge exception to that rule. And man, that is what that means for 2024. I have no idea, but like that means something for the long haul with that guy.
A couple things. I think Steve Angeli has become a really accurate thrower of the football, and it started last year and we really saw it in the Sun Bowl. Credit to him. I think he gained a great deal of confidence last year. Credit to Gino Guidulli for a lot of that as well. The ball coming out of CJ Carr's hand is just, it's pretty. It's pretty. And Pete, to your point, the ball just kind of keeps going and going and going. And when it does arrive at the receiver, it looks very catchable. All of that, we saw all of that yesterday, but I'm going to throw in another disclaimer. All of that is great. We have no idea how he's going to read coverages. We have no idea how he's going to set protections. And so when he had a question today about...
He did not see Almost Dying when Tosh Baker gave up the 1 second.
Yeah, no, I did. Okay, yeah, okay, right. But, I mean, those are all important aspects of the position. We had a question that was submitted, and no offense, I don't remember who submitted the question, but wanted me to compare, contrast, better, worst, equal to Jimmy Clausen. Now, I didn't use that, but now that I look, I mean, in terms of how the ball comes out of his hand and how it gets downfield and how it arrives at a receiver, I think it's fair to put him in that category with him. But there's so much more to the position that I didn't include that question. But point taken, it's all aesthetically very good. Leonard, I thought there were stretches yesterday where he was extremely accurate. I thought that he threw a couple passes that were behind people. There were a couple passes where the guy was covered and there was no way he was going to complete it. We haven't even mentioned Kenny Minchie. I thought Kenny Minchie threw the ball well. It was a rare moment in football observation where we all came away saying, you know what? There are four quarterbacks that are capable of throwing football well.
You don't think August of 2022 was one of those times, guys, when we were told they all threw great. So there was.
No, I don't think it was.
No, you know, I was thinking August 2018. If you brought that net out there today, all four would hit it. No problem. Yes,
they would dominate the net game. This would be a good net crew.
Okay. We got our quarterback conversation in there. We're going to go on to DMB 346. And this was addressed, but I'm going to throw it out there anyway. It looks to me like Jaden Greathouse is a great deal quicker this spring than he was last spring. Am I crazy, or is that something the crew noticed? We mentioned it in the instant analysis yesterday. That was my observation. I don't know what exactly you guys thought of Greathouse yesterday.
Yeah, just more changes to his frame. I agree with some quickness there. What stands out to me is just his body control, and it's really advanced for a guy that has still been on a college campus now for 14 months or whatever it is. His body control shows an awareness and an intelligence on the field that is far beyond his years.
Yeah, I totally agree with his balance in and out of cuts. That's always been impressive to me. I'm not sure he looked any quicker to me yesterday than he did last year, but he looked plenty quick last year. So I'm not sure that was something I felt like he needed to improve on.
I also think he's the best natural catcher of football. So I'm still really excited to watch Greathouse's career develop here. I'm just glad he doesn't have to be the number one wide receiver, and they went out and got some players.
Did I see a conversation on the Irish Illustrated message board about him being the fifth or sixth receiver this year?
Yeah, but you're supposed to ignore those when you see those.
Well, you weren't by me to remind me.
Yeah, I wasn't sitting next to you at the game. Stop.
I need that. I mean, I agree with all that about Greathouse, and I will say that Micah Gilbert looked like that yesterday to me as well. Really impressive. I don't think Cam Williams, did I say this out loud? I don't think Cam Williams is going to make a significant impact this year. There's a greater learning curve with him. And
which is okay.
And probably, which is perfectly fine. I thought he looked like a hell of an athlete yesterday. Yep. But we're talking now about a much improved wide receiver core, and it's going to be hard for him to wedge his way into that group and, you know, get the reps that he needs.
You want to ask this question, Tim?
Right? I do. Martin Evenflow. Potentially Morrison, Watts, Hurd, and Gray are Notre Dame's best DB group since. And Martin Evenflow throws out Sapp, Earl, Duff, and Walton in 2002. And then some really heady stuff. Burris, Taylor, Carter, Lane in 1992.
Easy guys.
Yeah. Well, let's first of all, let's do the 1992 secondary. Okay. So Greg Lane started, but he was not one of the seven defensive backs drafted later on.
That was on that team.
Yeah. Seven. Two in the first round, one in the second round. The second round was the best one of all of them, Bobby Taylor. Seven defensive backs drafted from the team, and Greg Lane wasn't one of them, so he was good. So let's remove 92 from the equation. I really like the 02 is my favorite, quote-unquote favorite, because they're so fun to watch. Like Walton, the playmaker, that's when you could still hit a little bit illegally, and Glen Earl was great at that. It was Sapp having his one great year. Jerome Sapp was really good that year. Duff was a playmaker on special teams and defense, but their nickel was Preston Jackson, and that's why I want to bring up this group. Watts, Hurd, Gray, and Morrison, and Mickey, got to include Mickey, aren't as good yet as last year's team, because they had Cam Hart, Morrison, Watts, Thomas Harper at nickel, and then I think Hurd could be a better safety than DJ Brown, but we haven't seen that yet. Yeah. Look, the nickel is crucial to how this all works, and when those four guys at 02 faced, I know he was great, but Carson Palmer, you looked out there, they lost Jerome Sapp for the game, and it was lights out for that game. You need some depth, and that's we need to see the nickel here in 2023.
But I think it, I mean, if you project a little bit, I agree with you, Tim, completely. I think
Cam Hart was awesome.
Yeah. Martin Evenflow, I understand where he's going with this, and certainly, you know, this group, the evolution of this group should be good. I mean, it should.
Yeah, they should be really good.
I hesitate to say it when we haven't seen Hurd in a Notre Dame uniform yet. I like what I saw of him at Northwestern. We haven't seen Gray as a starter. Mickey has to be included in that. Boy, it sure would be great if, you know, here Jordan Clark's got a quad injury on the first day of spring drills. I'm sure there's a good reason for it, but he's got to get out there and he's got to prove that he can play. It sure would be great if Mickey and or Gray could play some nickel. I don't really know how feasible that is.
I would say, I mean, a shout out to the 2018 group, Love, yeah. Pride, Elliot Gilman. Same issue as 2002, though. The nickel was Nick Coleman and Houston Griffith, and that struggled. And, you know, obviously we, you know, when they lost Love for a quarter in the Cotton Bowl, it all kind of fell apart. But we judge this all based on like what's your best starting five or your starting four. And you know, that 2018 group was really freaking good too.
All right, Tim, we want to wrap it up here. I'll go ahead and ask this. Everything's been pretty much on point with spring football, but we have some news of Drew Tranquil in the NFL. And the question comes from the, and it is Drew Tranquil picking up the tab the next time we all go out, no matter what you thought he could achieve because of who he is as a competitor, a third contract, and this is news over the overnight, a third contract signed by Drew Tranquil worth $13 million guaranteed and up to $19 million possible has to catapult him into rare territory for overachievement, right? The Super Bowl ring was nice too. That's a lot of loot for Drew Tranquil, and he's earned it.
Yes, he has. That, Pete, I think you brought up two podcasts ago. When you're looking for a Notre Dame player that exceeded expectations, Drew Tranquil is on there. Remember, they lost to Michigan State and Duke in 2016. I think it was the Michigan State game where I saw Tranquil come up from safety to try to make a play and just like looked like he was on skates, just completely juked out of everything. Like, man, it just does not look right back there. Then that guy became an all-time captain leader Notre Dame linebacker, and now somehow he has done this for the Kansas City Chiefs. He is the top five answer to what you thought he could be in college to what he became in the NFL.
The contract definitely puts an exclamation point or an underline or an italics, whatever punctuation you want there. That's just a lot of money, and good for him for earning it. I mean, we all remember the double ACLs and just like what his college career and like getting to know him a little bit is, you know, it's like we don't get to know all the players as people just based on proximity. Drew Tranquil was somebody you felt like you got to know as a person a little bit, and what you got to know you really liked. So he was always an easy guy to root for, whether you're a reporter, if you know what I mean, or a fan of the program. So he was, you feel like he gets what he deserves here after really grinding it for his whole life to get to this point.
JB?
Yeah, I mean, just think it's a revelation of what he's been able to do, and it's got to be inspiring to a number of people. Now, I think we wait and see. Alohi Gilman is somewhat on a similar track, playing much more successfully than I believe some of us thought he might in the NFL, looking like he's going to have some longevity there. And what will we see out of J.D. Bertrand in the coming years?
I think we all felt, well, of course we did. Again, to your point, Pete, getting to know him, I've stayed in contact with him since he left Notre Dame. And, you know, we all expected if he could stay healthy, if he could, you know, put those ACLs behind him, he'd play in the NFL for quite a while. A contract like that, the Super Bowl champs, and I think did they sign him as a free agent or try? I think it was a free agent, right? I think they signed him as a free agent. What he did in the postseason, nothing on one hand, nothing surprises you with Drew Tranquil, but this is a pretty significant accomplishment on his part. And again, all of us that know him are happy for him because he's earned it. So Notre Dame is, they're going on spring break. And so there will not be football again until March 20th. Speaking of going on spring break, Pete Sampson's like going to the other hemisphere here for, I don't know, a month or two, or what's going on?
I'm crossing the international dateline, but that's not for a few weeks. So I've got my trip for Notre Dame spring break. I'm also going on a trip, but it is a work trip that I will be in Alabama and Mississippi for a week. So might have some stories to tell when I get back for this podcast on our next show.
Maybe right. Reese left. Actually,
yeah, no, it's a different part of Alabama.
Just want to make sure you knew.
All right, guys, appreciate you being here with us. We appreciate our listeners as always. And again, to get the full story provided by Irish Illustrated, join us on irishillustrated.com. Until next week, Tim Priester, Tim O'Malley, John Bryce, Pete Sampson, JB, you got something to throw in there?
No, I was just saying goodbye.
All right, man. Goodbye to all. Thank you for joining us on Irish Illustrated Insider.